Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast.
Hi.
It's so weird because it feels so natural to say that now.
I still don't know what to say after you say that.
I know, you're like, hi.
I'm just kind of here.
You're present. That's all that matters.
It is.
So how's your week going?
I'm Emily.
Oh, I'm Jeanette.
And this is Horror Slumber Party.
Yes, welcome back, folks.
Well, my week was pretty bad.
Sad. Why?
I got a raging UTI on Tuesday that almost turned into a kidney infection.
Oh my god. Those are like, but it's like a gateway drug to kidney infections.
Ew. I mean, you're not wrong, but
it's so true. That sucks.
It wasn't fun. Yeah, but we were going to record on Wednesday, but I was like, no.
That's true, y'all.
We're not doing that.
She texted me and she's like, I feel like crap, so no. And I was like, all right, that sucks, but okay.
So now we're recording almost an entire week later.
Fun.
Yay.
Clap to us being consistent.
Yay. Well, I mean, school started. You can't expect us to be... No, they can't expect us to be consistent. I mean, it's...
I guess so.
It's a pretty normal thing to expect of us.
Oh, Lord.
How was your week?
It was good. I had my first day of work, but it wasn't, like, intense because we haven't actually opened yet, you know? I work at a restaurant, guys. Anyways, it's, a brand new one, so they're, like, still building it. They open, on the 11th, so it's still going to be a while until I get my actual first day. But they're like, oh, do you want to come up and help us decorate for $12 an hour? And I was like, all right.
I mean, yeah, I'd do the same.
So I strung up fish and hung them up on the ceiling. It was great.
Well, isn't that nice?
From 8 a.m. till 7:30 p.m.
That's a very long time.
You know, it was, but...
What kind of restaurant is it again?
Mexican food, Tex-Mex.
And you were hanging fish up?
Yep.
Okay.
I liked it, though, because I got to, hang out and, talk, get to know, all of my managers and, a handful of my coworkers. So that was kind of cool. I got to, break the ice. Not really.
Oh, yeah. That is nice.
They were all fun. They weren't, scary. You know, I feel like every time I start a new job, I'm always, afraid the managers are going to be mean.
But, yeah. I get that.
Karina's not, though. She's great. We had to mention her. Here we go.
Of course. Of course we did.
That's how I'm going to stay a part of the crew. Is mention Karina in every episode.
Yeah, and then randomly message a group chat.
That you didn't even reply in.
I mean, I was going to talk to you tonight. I didn't think I had to.
Oh! Okay. Wipes my settled tear away.
We're literally talking right now.
You're right. It's fine. I have, have you, the question I was going to ask, in person, well, not in person, but not on air. Have you had any homework yet from school?
Yeah, because I'm in 3 online classes, so.
Okay. You're not in any, in class, face-to-face?
No, I have one, but my semester is pretty open because I'm trying to audition for another school and, plan a wedding and, all that stuff.
Correct. Which I'm super stoked for. I told Parker the date, by the way.
Yeah.
He's really excited for y'all and for the whole occasion. So, anyways, that was it with that. I have had a crap ton of homework already.
Yeah.
I had 2 tests. Well, quizzes, I guess. Not really tests. 2 quizzes. I have 2 speeches on Wednesday, and I have an essay on Wednesday.
Oh.
Fun. Excuse me? How rude.
That sounds awful.
I know. But the campus is great. Literally.
Oh, that's good.
I'm loving it. When you visit, we're going to go to campus just so you can see it.
Oh. Okay.
You're welcome. I mean, I know Natalie was like, I want to see your campus. And I was like, okay, so I guess everyone wants to see it. I'm taking Emily.
I mean, sure, I'd like to see it. Yeah.
It'll be fun to see just like, because it's totally different from UTPB. So it's like another UT campus, you know? You could just
see it in there.
But anyways, maybe you can get a t-shirt.
Maybe. Real quickly, you know how David is in this Discord chat because he was trying to help make it work last week? He apparently got a notification that we were recording.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Now he knows every time we're starting an episode. He'll be like, oh, great, finally, they're recording.
He is actually wanting to do an episode with us soon. I don't know why I paused right there.
When?
Over Y2K and why people thought the world was ending, because he like got mad at me. He was like, you guys just talked, you didn't even talk about it. Like, there's so many things. And I was like, that is not what the episode was about.
I know, that episode was literally just a ramble. Like, we weren't going to do anything serious.
But so he wants to come on and talk about that. So
that'd be so much fun. I feel like I haven't talked to him in forever.
And since we have this working now, we can actually do that.
Exactly. That's so true.
Yeah. I'm not going to see him for 2 weeks, which is the longest that we've been apart from each other since we've known each other. So
I'm just so sad.
That's fun. All right. Well,
distance makes the heart grow fonder.
Wait, I pulled my headphone out. Hold on.
Did you not even hear me?
No, what was that?
Shall I repeat, audience? Okay, they said yes.
Is this Dora?
Yes. Distance makes the heart grow fonder.
I mean, it does, though. It's really strange.
Yeah, it's great.
Okay, well, shall we get into the episode?
Yeah. I was about to say my heart isn't fond anymore because me and Parker are right next to each other.
Ooh. Sorry, Parker.
But I'm just kidding. I love
him. Alrighty.
Okay. So, hey guys, here's our story.
Oh, are we greeting them again?
Yeah.
All right. Well, if you skipped ahead to get to this point, hi, welcome back.
So, like, we don't care about your lives.
I mean, that's fair. It's okay.
Me neither.
Today, we are going to be talking about Ed Kemper. Have you heard of him before?
I have not.
Okay. He is featured on Criminal Minds.
Let's be real. I haven't, seen any of the Criminal Minds. Two, I never really know who you're talking about, so that makes it 10 times more interesting. Anyways, go on.
Yeah, I do like that.
y'all, have you heard of him? No. Have you heard of him? No.
Yeah, I really do like that, actually. It's pretty nice. So he is also known as the co-ed killer.
Oh.
So let me tell you a little bit about this guy. So, you know, something I did not write down, apparently, was his date of birth. Give me a moment.
Okay. Here comes the moment, folks.
The moment's coming. Oh, my gosh. I'm sorry. Okay, so his birthday is December 18th, 1948. His nickname was also the co-ed butcher, by the way. He is, as of right now, 71 years old.
71?
That's not right math. Yeah, it is. Wait, what? Oh,
I don't know.
Is okay. it? I'm Wait, sorry, I'm so unprofessional. No, that's not right at all. Is it? Wait. No, it's right. It is right. We don't know basic math.
Hold on. It's literally just because I said 71, like as a question. And you're like, let me second guess myself.
I'm sorry.
Accuracy. Okay. Anyways, go on. 71.
Okay. Sorry. Okay. So just so you guys know, this one is, I'm going to say it, it's a rough case.
Really? Is it really?
So trigger warning, it does include rape, necrophilia, and animals.
Oh, no.
The animals are only at the beginning.
Did he kill them when he was young?
Yeah.
Okay, I feel like that's a lot of... Yeah, okay.
Yeah, okay.
I'm so... spoiling. Keep going.
So he was born in Burbank, California, 1948. He was the middle child of Clornell Elizabeth Kemper and Edmund Emil Kemper II. His older sister's name was Susan Huey Kemper, and his younger sister's name was Alan Lee Kemper. His father fought in World War II, and then he returned to California, where he was an electrician. They had a very bad marriage, apparently. Clornell would often complain about how he didn't make a lot of money as an electrician, and he was quoted saying, "Suicide missions in wartime and the atomic bomb testings were nothing compared living with her." So.
Oh.
There's that.
Okay.
Noted. So, yeah. So, Edmund, who in my notes, by the way, I have POS in parentheses, just so you know. He was already a piece of shit.
Oh!
Yeah.
I was like, what? I was like that meme with the math behind her. Anyways, go on.
Oh, yeah. That was me a minute ago trying to figure
that
out.
That is so true. That's the title of this video, by the way, folks.
Okay. So he was already super tall whenever he was 4 years old. So when he was 10 years old, he decided to bury a cat alive. And then he dug it back up after it had died, decapitated it, and mounted its head on a spike.
Why the hell?
So
much work put into that.
Yeah. He was 10.
Oh,
that's
God.
Plenty past the time in which it's like, oh, it's just a kid that's like curious about things. But also, if even like a 2-year-old did that, I'd still be like, okay, you're leaving the home right now.
Yeah.
You can't live here anymore. That's definitely like something that would happen and you'd be like, okay.
Right.
This is not.
Okay. I would be highly concerned if my child was doing this. I'm sorry, but I would take immediate action.
Well, as we're going to learn, his parents weren't the best.
Oh, sad. Okay, go on.
He killed another cat when he was 13. And do you want to know the reason that he did this one?
Why?
Because he felt it gave more affection to his sister.
What?
Yeah. Reasonable, right?
I mean, sure, if we want to go with that.
Yeah, no, not at all.
No, I caught your sarcasm.
But yeah, so we have that. Whew, sorry, I just...
I don't like animals dying.
Yeah, me neither, which
I
is
mean, I don't
why
like humans dying either, but you know, I...
Of course. Something is different about animals dying, you know? It's just because they don't have any...
It's like...
I don't know.
I was about to say it's because they can't protect themselves, but some, like, the majority of the time, neither can humans, so...
Right.
But I was going towards that end, which is true. They can't, and they also don't know what's happening, so they're like, oh, okay. But anyways, go on.
Okay. So... Apparently, his childhood was filled with quote-unquote dark fantasies, in which he would play apparently odd and ritualistic games with his younger sister's dolls, where he'd pull off the heads and the hands.
Ew.
And then he would often take his father's bayonet and leave the home unnoticed, and watch his second-grade teacher through a window in her home.
Oh!
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah.
No. Jeanette does not approve.
No. His favorite games were apparently gas chamber and electric chair, in which his sister Alan I believe that's how you pronounce it, at least, would pretend to tie him or flip the switch while he acted like a convict undergoing his execution. Those were his favorite games.
What child? What?
Yeah.
I'm like, no, this game is not allowed. This is not... Oh my god. Okay, go on. I'm so confused. Yeah.
You know, this one's a... It's a doozy. So he apparently had two near-death experiences as a child. One time, his older sister, Susan, attempted to push him in front of an oncoming train.
Are his siblings going to be as crazy?
I don't think so. No.
I feel like they're just as bad.
You know, I haven't read about them, like, future-wise, so.
Okay. All right.
I at least hope they turned out okay, but I don't... ugh. And then another time he came close to drowning after she pushed him into a swimming pool. Yeah. So his parents separated in 1957. So whenever he was still, you know, young, he was only 9. Yeah. Yeah, 9.
So that was before he killed both of the cats.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, 9. I just keep... Oh, my gosh. Okay. So
Emily doesn't know numbers.
I really don't, do I? So he had a close relationship with his father, but his father moved. Or he had to move with his mother to Helena, Montana. Helena. It's the capital.
Oh, I did not know that.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I think so. I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
You're all second guessing yourself again.
I'm second guessing everything right now. I have notes literally in front
Emily,
of me.
Emily, what is your name?
I don't know. Okay, but he had a deep resentment towards her. Apparently she was, this is quotes, a neurotic, domineering alcoholic who would frequently belittle, humiliate, and abuse him. She forced him to spend the nights in a locked basement, as she believed he would harm his sisters otherwise.
I feel like, okay, I mean, I'm not defending him because he ended up being bad anyways, but I feel like his sisters were more harmful to him.
Makes sense.
Like, they were the ones that almost killed him many times.
And his mother obviously was very harmful to him as well. Locked him in the basement because she thought he would hurt them whenever...
Parenting 101.
Don't do that. Pretty simple. But that happened. And one of the reasons, by the way, that this happened was because he was just so tall. By the way.
Because he was tall?
Mm-hmm. Like, just big.
So she was, like, intimidated by him or something?
Yeah.
That's freaking weird.
Yeah, and, I just keep saying and, that should, like, take a shot every time I say and, don't do that. That would be a really bad idea. I'm not gonna do it.
Okay.
Sorry. And... sorry, I just lost my place in my notes. Okay, I'm so sorry. By the time that he was, you know, grown entirely in age, he was 6'9".
Oh, dang.
So he was really tall. So whenever he was 14 years old, he fled from his mother's house and he went to his father's house in Van Nuys, Los Angeles, California. Once he was there, he found that his father had already remarried and had a son with his new wife. So Edmund II, he sent him to live with his own parents, Maud and Edmund Kemper, in North Fork. And then he came to hate his grandparents soon, too. So now we're going to get to the crazy parts, okay?
All right.
So on August 27th, 1964, he got into an argument with his grandmother. This resulted in him going into his bedroom, getting a 22 caliber rifle that his grandfather had given him, and then he shot her in the head, and then twice more in the back. So, oh, no. Yeah, his grandfather had been out shopping. So whenever he saw that his grandfather had come home, he shot him on the driveway as he was walking up to the house. And do you want to hear his reasoning for both of these?
Go for it.
So the reason that he killed his grandmother was because he wanted to know what it felt like. And then his grandfather, because he didn't. No, go ahead.
Maybe because I'm not insane, but I don't think I would ever want to know what it feels like to kill someone.
I'm not arguing there. I totally agree with you.
Oh, no. Okay, go on.
And then the reason that he shot his grandfather was that way he didn't have to see his dead wife.
Oh.
Which, if you look at the two different reasons there, it clearly showed who, like, gender-wise, who he thought was superior, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he wanted to kill a woman just to see what it felt like, and then a man just because he didn't want the man to be sad. So, not funny. Yeah.
Oh my god.
That was his first killing. It was
19- I got chills still from the fact that he just wanted to know what it felt like.
Isn't it terrifying? So, yeah, he was about 16 to 15 when that happened. I think it was 15 exactly, but yeah. So after this, he called his mother and told her what happened. And basically, she said, okay, you have to call the police right now or else I will. So he called the police and then he was, you know, arrested, obviously. And he was sent to the criminally insane unit at, this is very hard to pronounce, Atascadero State Hospital. It's spelled Atascadero.
Say that again.
Atascadero, Atascadero.
What a weird name.
Yeah. And he was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
So now we're going to get to some gruesome crimes, okay?
No.
I'm sorry.
No.
Oh.
Don't do it.
All right. Thanks for listening to our podcast, guys.
Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye. Okay, so for these crimes that are coming up, I have a quote here from him. He is still alive, by the way. As, you know, we tried to work out his age earlier, so obviously he is. But this was him trying to explain his motives for the crimes. He said, my frustration, my inability to communicate socially, sexually. I wasn't incompetent. I was scared of failing in male-female relationships. So, he purchased a 22 caliber pistol.
And then always a 22 caliber.
It's a pretty common size, I'm pretty sure. But yeah, it really is. So, and then he went looking for a pretty hitchhiker.
Ew, no.
So, he found one who was named Cindy Shaw.
Cindy Shaw.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I've heard that name before. Maybe it's just common, so.
Maybe. And this happened on January 7th, 1973. So he was about 25 at the time. So this was like right after he got out of prison. Okay. Or whatever. It was the state hospital. So He drove to a secluded area and shot her quickly. Apparently, he wasn't interested in the torture. So he just wanted to kill them and get it out of the way. He was also living at home with his mother, again, at this point.
Oh.
So he took the corpse home and dismembered her in the bathtub.
Ew.
Uh-huh. He kept her overnight in his room.
That reminds me of Bates Motel, is the dismembering in the bathtub. I'm pretty sure that's a scene.
Probably. I never got through Bates Motel.
I freaking love that show.
On to less fictional things, unfortunately. he kept her overnight in his room, beheaded her, and then buried her head in the backyard. He threw the body parts over the cliff, and they washed up onto the beach, but he knew that they couldn't tie it to them. So he wasn't even worried, and no one did suspect him at all. So, on
February
5th, after a big argument with his mother, he went out again. And this is when Rosalind Thorpe and Allison Liu disappeared from campus. So he got Rosalind first, but her presence in the car apparently reassured Allison, who got in willingly.
Ew.
Which is sad.
No.
So sad. So Allison was sitting in the back, right behind Rosalind. And this is a quote from him, because they interviewed him many times. I actually have some more quotes from him at the end from just an interview that they did. But he was just very open about all of this. He's one of those guys, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So this is one of those things, one of those cases. He said, "I went on down a ways and slowed down. I remarked on the beautiful view. I hesitated for several seconds. I had been moving my pistol from down below my leg in my lap. I picked it up and pulled the trigger. As I fired, she fell against the window. Miss Liu panicked. I had to fire through her hands. She was moving around and I missed twice." So this part of the story apparently varies according to different amounts. So one of the accounts said that she was already dead at this point, because they went, sorry, I didn't even say what was going on. They went to the university, and so as he was approaching the university gate, like security guards. So one account said that she was already dead, but another one described her as apparently breathing loudly and moaning. So there were two men at the security gate, but they saw his university sticker and they waved him through. However, you know, there were two dead bodies in the car. One of them was in the front passenger seat and one of them was just in the back seat. And he told some interviewers that he had explained to the guard that they were drunk and he was trying to get them back to their dorms.
Oh my gosh.
They accepted the story. And he said, this is a quote, "It was getting easier to do. I was getting better at it." Yeah. Then he took the girls' bodies to his mother's home, dismembered and beheaded them with his mother nearby and neighbors around, as it says. Another account says that he beheaded them outside and then took one headless corpse inside to have sex with the head.
Oh.
Uh-huh.
Oh.
He was aware that a neighbor That's one of the most disturbing and disgusting things to me about this case, without a doubt.
It's gross because, like, I hate it, but, like, when you're, like, either reading something or hearing something, since it's not already, like, visible, your brain will, like, imagine it for you.
Oh, it's awful.
Like, automatically. And I'm like, yeah. I don't want this in my head.
Get that out, please. Yeah.
Ugh.
Exactly. So he knew that a neighbor only had to walk by and look inside so that he could see what they were doing, but apparently no one walked by. So he did that knowing full well someone could just walk by. The next morning, he deposited the limbs into the ocean.
Gross. And then Don't say limbs.
I'm reading word for word. I'm sorry. and he tossed their heads separately. Apparently, this was known as his fourth episode of killing. So this next part, on Murderpedia at least, was titled Revenge.
Oh, no.
So do you want to assume who his next target might be?
Well, one of his family members, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The mom?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah.
So, sorry. I'm just going to read this part word for word. It's just easier right here.
Isn't that how what you have been?
No.
Oh.
No, I'm using, like, notes and stuff like that. This is just a paragraph that I have copied and pasted. It's just easier this way.
Got it.
After killing six young women. Six. Did I miss a few?
Yes.
Okay.
I hear your pages is turning.
I'm really sorry, everyone out there. After killing six young women, the 6'9" giant turned his eager against his ultimate target, his mother. While most experts later claim that his killing was really about symbolic rehearsal for killing his mother, and once he dispatched her, he no longer need to kill, his explanation was quite different. He indicated in an interview he had sensed the cops closing in after Argent Alefi had paid him a call about his gun, and he wanted to spare his mother the embarrassment of learning that he was the co-ed butcher.
Wait, so, why is it called co-ed?
Well, co-ed is usually known as a female student at a co-educational institution. So, yeah. I totally understand why you were confused, though.
Okay, I was like, Anyways, go on.
Okay. So he feared that his mother would have found the items that he had found taken from his mother.
Mm-hmm.
Goodness gracious. Yeah, I skipped over a bunch. I'm really sorry, guys. Okay, I will go back and talk about those in a little bit. Wow, where am I? Okay, so welcome to, I have a sick brain right now, so it's still like not all the way there.
Oh my lord.
Okay, this is a quote. I can't get away from her. She knows all my buttons and I dance like a puppet. So he thought that if he didn't kill her, no, he just thought he would kill her. Like he just, that was just, he planned that out. So she came home tipsy one evening. However, some accounts say nothing about how she was inebriated. So if she actually was or not, that's a good question. So he went into her room and she said, I suppose you want to talk now. And then he waited for her to go to bed. Yeah.
I don't like it when people kill people in bed. Like, that's my safe place.
I totally agree. This
go
was
night
the only-
night, not to die. Sorry. I Wait, said that's where that? I go night night, not to die.
Yeah, you're right. apparently, this was his only kill that he was talking about in these interviews that he was showing any sort of remorse. So, yeesh. So he said it was so hard. I cut off her head and I humiliated her, of course. She was dead because of the way that she raised her son. But apparently, he said he'd wished she'd stayed up later to talk to him. So he put her head on the mantle. And
did he talk to it?
Yes. He said what he wanted it to say. And then he threw darts at it. It's awful, right? Apparently, he said it felt satisfying to him.
That's gross.
So,
I don't see how any of that could be satisfying. But once again, I know this year, so.
Of course, of course. He was, you know, he was going to be linked to this, so he put a note quoted in Chaney's book approximately 5:15 on Saturday morning. No need for her to suffer anymore at the hands of this horrible, murderous butcher. It was quick sleep the way I wanted it.
So he really torches the bodies afterwards. Right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. He doesn't like the torture beforehand, but afterwards, yeah.
I mean, don't take this the wrong way, guys, but I feel like that's better than before, you know?
I mean,
it's not good at all, but you know what I'm saying? Like,
no, of course.
A lot of serial killers and stuff like to play with them instead of just kill them. But, like, at least he just kills them first.
I agree with that.
I mean, it's still freaking sick as hell, but you know what I'm saying. Okay, anyways, go on.
Yes, obviously none of this is acceptable.
Right.
In any way.
I'm just comparing it to other stories.
Ooh. Okay. So apparently he believed two victims would deflect the attention from him. So then he invited a woman named Sally Hallett over. He then punched and strangled her and then laid her naked on his bed. And then he spent the night that night with two corpses in his home.
Ew.
Apparently there was blood everywhere. One account says that he tried to have sex with her Hallett's corpse. And then he beheaded her.
He tried?
It just says tried. I don't care to know if it succeeded.
I know, me neither. I'm just confused.
Yeah, I'm also a little bit confused there. So on Easter morning, he left in her car. And whenever he turned on the radio, he apparently was hoping that someone had discovered the bodies.
He was hoping?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Because he's a serial killer and he wants people to see his work. Ugh. Mm-hmm.
What the freak?
Yeah, I know.
That's why he like does things out in the open too.
Yeah. Exactly. So that disappointed him, apparently. By the time he reached Pueblo after driving some 1,500 miles, he decided to instigate the discovery. So then he called the police himself.
Oh.
Yeah.
My goodness. Okay, go on. I'm intrigued.
So he showed them where he had buried the head of Cynthia Skull.
So he straight up said, I buried her head here. Uh-huh. And oh.
Yeah.
Does he not realize that this can get him in trouble?
Apparently not. No.
I mean, okay, that's fine. Rat yourself out. Go on.
Yeah. He said that this is disgusting. He said he had placed it there so he could take satisfaction in knowing, according to one detective, she was on his property looking toward the sky. As they drove, he described the murder in detail and showed him where he had disposed of the bodies. Yes.
Excuse me?
So, yeah, he was indicted on 8 counts of first-degree murder on May 7th, 1973. So, the chief public defender of Santa Cruz County, attorney Jim Jackson, had demanded Frazier and was assigned to the Mullen case as well. So then he took on Kemper's defense, in which he offered the insanity plea. He apparently had his hands full at this time, especially since the detailed confessions had robbed him of any strategy except for the insanity defense. Which, I mean, that's literally the most he could do to try to get less time in jail was insanity at that point.
Okay.
So, awaiting his trial, he tried to commit suicide by slashing his wrist twice.
So, was he wanting to die?
Honestly, I don't know.
I think so. Maybe that was a point as to why he didn't really care if people saw him and, like, ratted himself out and stuff.
Yeah, that would make sense.
I mean, but then again, people are just sick and they're like, yes, look at my job well done. I don't know. Go on.
Oh, for sure. Sick. Oh, also, wait, I'm so sorry. It wasn't Criminal Minds that I was thinking of. Whoopsies. It was Mindhunter.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't
know. My bad.
At least I know of Criminal Minds, but Mindhunter, I never heard of that.
Wait, really?
Really?
I have the book Mindhunter. I've been wanting to read it, but I haven't yet, so.
All right.
So, real quickly, we're going to go to the victims that I unfortunately skipped past. I knew I had missed something. I'm really sorry about that, you guys. My notes got all kind of messed up.
It's okay. I didn't mind it.
Thank you. Other but people now that may
we're,
have.
I'm now that sorry. We're going back to them, I do mind it.
Okay. So Mary Ann Pesch and Anita Lucchese, I'm not too sure how to pronounce her last name, they were students of Fresno State University, and they were hitchhiking to Stanford University.
No.
So unfortunately, neither of them reached their destination. He had apparently, apparently girls had disappeared like all of the time, but they would turn up later, and it wasn't very like time pressing for the police, you know?
Right.
So it wouldn't have done any good even if the police had been like immediately doing something. Apparently Edmund had dispatched Mary Ann and Anita soon after picking them up. He drove them around for a little bit, took his gun out from under the seat, and pulled into a deserted place. He put Anita into the trunk of the car and turned his attention towards Mary Ann, who handcuffed her and laid her across the back seat face down. He then put a plastic bag over her head and then attempted to strangle her with a length of a terry cloth. She bit a hole in the bag and the cloth had snapped. So apparently he got frustrated and stabbed her multiple times with a knife that he pulled out.
Oh my God.
Eventually he slashed her throat. He then removed Anita from the trunk and stabbed her with a larger knife. And apparently she fought and screamed, but eventually he wore her down. He drove around with the bodies in the car for like a while trying to decide what to do. And then eventually he brought Mary Ann's body into his apartment where he undressed and dissected her. Ew. He also beheaded her.
Ew.
Or he beheaded Anita. I'm so
sorry. He liked to behead people.
Yeah. I know. Mary Ann's body was buried in the plastic bag he had tried to suffocate her with. Apparently he kept both of their heads around for a while. Eventually disposing of them into a ravine. So Mary Ann's it was found. Wait, so but
if he kept them around,
yeah,
but later disposed of them, what would he just stare at them like when he kept them around, or what? Like,
probably. Like, it's also, you know, thought that he would have raped the heads.
Oh yeah, that too. Okay, never mind. Gross.
But he may have, because do you remember the quote that I had said at the very beginning? Let me read it again. My frustration, my inability to communicate socially, sexually, I wasn't impotent. I was scared to death of failing in male-female relationships. I also feel like he was just using them for company.
Oh, which is okay.
Disgusting, awful, all of the above.
Yeah, but it kind of makes sense in a weird way, you know?
In a disgusting, awful way, I guess.
Yeah, but, like, considering he didn't like actual human interaction,
yeah,
it makes sense as to why he used those as, like, his company.
Of course. Of course. Gross. This one is a pretty high-profile case. And I feel like since I'm jumping around a lot, I'm not doing a very good job at this. So I'm very sorry, you guys.
I mean, I'm catching all the facts.
All right. Awesome.
So, I don't know if others are, but I am.
So on... Oh, I'm sorry. Mary Ann's body was found in August. Whenever all of... It was found in August of that year. But unfortunately, Anita's head or body was never found.
That's sad.
So no one had suspected him yet. So he was like, I might as well just keep going.
Oh my God.
So on September 14th, 1972, he picked up a girl named Aiko Ku, who was 15 years old. And she was apparently on her way to dance class. But she got tired of waiting for the bus, so decided to hitchhike. Yeah. Apparently, she caught on to the plan very quickly and had panicked. He convinced her that he was planning on using the gun to kill himself, and that if she didn't try to signal police or passerbys, she would not be harmed. Mm-hmm. He drove into the mountains and turned off the main road, parking out of sight. He taped her mouth and tried to suffocate her by putting his thumb and index finger in her nostrils. Apparently, she fought a lot, but then lost consciousness. But then she did regain consciousness moments later, and he began to suffocate her again. He stopped breathing completely. He removed her from the car, laid her on the ground, and raped her. And then with her own scarf, he strangled her until she was sure that he was dead. He put her body in the trunk and drove away. Apparently, he stopped at a local bar for a couple beers with this poor girl's body still in his car, which is disgusting.
Oh, okay. Gross.
Very.
I'm all okay. Just catching these
horrible
facts. Blech.
Yeah, it's awful. He apparently dissected her in the same way that he had Mary Ann and Anita. And he disposed of her head and hands in a very in a different location than the rest of her body. Unfortunately, very little of her was ever brought up again.
That's so sad.
I know. So, okay. So sad. Well, now we're caught up again.
Okay. Back to the present. Well, not present, but, you know.
Back to 1973.
The present.
So, apparently, psychiatrists found him to be sane. So, I actually didn't mention this earlier, but whenever he was in the state hospital, whenever he was 15 for killing his grandparents, he had an IQ of 135. And then later 140, which is very high.
Oh, okay. And
so he was able to administer psychiatric tests to others. Like, they let him do that while he was there.
Mm.
Yeah. So apparently he interviewed Kemper, Dr. Joel Fort, who had he had looked at his records to examine the diagnosis. To see if he was, you know, insane. He interviewed him at length, including under truth serum, which told the court that he had probably engaged in acts of cannibalism.
Ew.
He had apparently cooked and ate parts of the girl's flesh while dismembering them. However, later on, he was saying that this wasn't true, and he was using this just to go with the insanity part.
I think it's true, though.
Yeah,
I feel like that's totally something he would have done.
Yeah, disgustingly, yes. Kemper's... So, wow, words are hard. His younger sister described strange acts that she had seen her brother try to do while... like they were talking to family and stuff like that. They also talked to Atascaderos. That word is so hard. their diagnosis of him whenever he was 15. I did say what his diagnosis was. Yes.
Yes.
Paranoid schizophrenia.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They talked to him about that. Yeah. So he took the stand on November 1st. Apparently, the jury heard enlarged portions about his detailed confession and already knew what he had to say for himself. He discussed what he knew about the mental state and tried to convince the jury that his need to possess a woman and his acts of necrophilia were clear indications of an unstable state of mind.
Well, obviously.
He had already told the interrogator that he'd felt remorse and that he'd taken to drinking more and more to relieve the pressure. But he had also described the sexual thrill he achieved from removing someone's head.
Ew.
And had said that killing was a narcotic to him.
Ew. Ew.
Very ew.
Thank God.
He also described the feeling he had when that two beings inhabited his body, and when his killer personality took over, it was kind of like blacking out. And he said this was the same thing that happened whenever he had shot his grandmother.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
This sick son of a bitch. I'm sorry, I never really cuss on these things, but...
No.
Oh my gosh.
I agree. The trial lasted less than 3 weeks. How much he was saying was true, like, no one could tell, really, because there was so much information coming from him. So, yeah. This part is really interesting.
Okay.
So, he had hoped to receive the death penalty on the count of, well, in the end, he was found guilty on counts of 8 counts of first-degree murder, which is definitely, you know, liable for the death penalty, without a doubt, especially with the disgusting things that he did with them. He was convicted during a time in which the Supreme Court had placed a moratorium on capital punishment, and all death sentences were commuted to life imprisonment. So the death penalty only became applicable to crimes committed after January 1st, 1974. This happened in November 8th, 1972.
Dang.
I know. He was very close to being, like, getting the death penalty, but...
I wonder if he wanted it, since he played those games when he was little.
Mm-hmm. He said that he did.
Oh!
Mm-hmm.
They didn't listen to him, though, because of, like, his insanity?
Oh, probably. Yeah. Okay. So he was sentenced to life imprisonment. He was first sent to the California Medical Facility State Prison in Vacaville, north of San Francisco for observation.
Not same place.
Yeah, no. And he ended up in maximum security prison at Folsom. At one point, he requested psychosurgery, which involved inserting a probe into his brain to kill brain tissue and potentially cure him of his compulsive sexual aggression.
Gross.
His request was denied, possibly because authorities feared that he might then petition for release, which I think that's a very valid thing for them not to do.
Although
it does seem like that's good that he wants to do that. I hesitate to say it's good, but you know what I mean. It's good that he knows that he has a problem there, but, sorry, I'm sitting next to a window and I just got very scared for some reason.
It's because you're talking about spooky things and you're by a window.
I sure am. Talking about that now. It's definitely, he probably would have tried to get release if he would have had that surgery. He became apparently a model inmate and helped read books on tape for the blind. And then he went to the parole board and he told them he was not going to fit back into society.
Is that how they get recordings? Are these people in prison?
No, not all of them.
Oh.
I'm sure you can find some, but no.
Wow.
Wow, sorry. But yeah, apparently he... Why do I keep just zoning out? He went before the parole board and said that he didn't want to go back into society.
I mean, I...
In prison...
Society.
Yeah. In prison, he's reported to be cooperative and kind and would like to forget his past. While he readily participated in requests for interviews and self-examination, hoping that he would help others learn about offenders like him, he often disliked when some of his interviewers later said about him. Oh, he often... Why did I say wait? He often liked what some of his interviewers later said about him. I confused myself. So
this whole episode is just you confused.
Literally, I promise I researched this case a lot beforehand. I just...
Oh, wow. I believe you.
Okay, so goodness gracious. One of a pretty, I want to say, infamous quote from this monster.
What's his name again?
Ed Kemper.
Okay.
There is a quote that he has where one of his school friends asked, like, if he would want to kiss his teacher, you know, just like fun school stuff. And he said, first, I'd have to kill her.
Oh, no. What did the student say?
I have no idea what was said to that.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, very, very ew. So, any last comments before I get into the quotes?
No.
No?
No, I'm grossed out. Keep going.
Okay. So, his first two victims, Mary Ann Pesch and Anita Luchessa, them, he says, I had full intentions of killing them. I would have loved to rape them, but not having any experience at all. And then apparently he just trailed off.
Ew.
Very ew.
Ew.
So, he buried, Mary Ann's body in a redwood grove along the mountain highway, and casting that of Miss Luchessa, as it says here, that's what he would call them, by the way, was Miss.
Mm.
Yeah.
Gross. I don't know why that's gross, but it is.
I agree. Out in a brush on the hillside. He kept their heads for a long time, as I had mentioned before. Apparently, he led investigators to the grave where he had buried Mary Ann, right? And this is what he said. He said, sometimes afterward, I visited there to be near her because I loved her and wanted her.
Ew.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Yeah, just very, very you. So, in regards to, Cynthia Shawls, who was the girl in which her head he buried in the backyard. He said, with her face turned toward my bedroom window, and sometimes at night I talk to her, saying love things, the way you do to a girlfriend or a wife.
Ew. I'm going to throw up. That's, oh my God.
I know.
I just got the chills again. That's so freaking gross.
Yeah. It's very disgusting. So whenever he went hitchhiking, or he decided to pick up a hitchhiker, picked up Rosalind and Alice. But what he said was, well, apparently, my mother and I got into a real tiff. I was pissed. I told her I was going to a movie, and I jumped up and went straight to the campus because it was still early. I said, the first girl that's halfway decent that I pick up, I'm going to blow her brains out.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
These are... I don't like these quotes.
No.
They're not very inspirational.
I'm not going to argue with that either. These sure are not inspirational quotes. This is a long episode.
I know. I was looking at the time. I was like, oh, my.
Wow. You're welcome. Usually we've just been doing bonuses because we're so busy, but...
Right? Surprise, guys.
We're really coming right now. So whenever he killed his mother and friend... By the way, his mother was 52 when she got killed and her friend was 59. Whenever he took her car, he did it to surrender that way, quote unquote, so I wouldn't kill again. So whenever he got convicted by the jury, he apparently didn't disagree. He said, I wasn't really surprised when it came out that way. There's just no way they could find me insane. Society just isn't ready for that. 10 or 20 years from now, they would have, but they're not going to take that chance. So yeah, that was Ed Kemper, the co-ed killer.
Well, that was disgusting.
It really was.
But very interesting.
This one almost got put into a two-part. That way I could talk a little bit more about the cases, but...
I mean, it fit in one, just long.
It's a really long one, yeah. I mean, plus we mixed and matched, apparently, the victims. That's an awful way to say that. Let me retry. I didn't like it, though.
Their heads and their bodies were...
Ugh. Ew, no.
Anyways, gross.
It's so sad. I know. Obviously this is a very sensitive topic, and I really hope that I did the victims some sort of justice by talking about how awful this man was. Is. Right. He is still alive.
Ugh. That's so gross.
Yeah. There you go.
Well, I want y'all to let us know what you think. So make sure you email us at
horrorslumberparty@gmail.com.
There's even a pause before you.
I was going to say something, but then I realized what you had said. So I was like, I should probably do this first.
Okay, well then say what you're going to say now.
Oh, I was just going to say, and if you like whenever I, mess around with the timeline.
Oh yeah, there we go. Let us know. And Instagram at
Horror Slumber Party Podcast.
And Twitter.
Party_horror.
Huh. Okay. I did not like that guy. Well, I don't like any of them, but you know.
I didn't even tell you how I decided to choose this guy.
How did you decide to choose this guy?
I have a book called 100 Infamous Criminals.
Is he in this book?
I opened it to a random page and he was there and I was like, I don't want to talk about him.
And then you're like, let's talk about him.
I mean, yeah.
So. Wait, that's actually kind of fun. Just turning a page and be like, let's do him.
I was thinking about doing that. So since this was such a high-profile case, I probably won't do another high-profile case for a while.
Yeah, that would probably be a good idea.
You know, yeah.
Well, I guess that's it.
Yeah, that's it.
Gross.
You have the outro.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
I guess we can just hop on into it. Good night and scary dreams.
Bye.
Bye.